Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome renowned golf course architect Bo Welling, who's founder and chief executive officer of Bo Welling Design. So stay tuned to get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. All right. Welcome to the show. So glad you belong. At this hour, we wanted to catch up with some more people we saw in Orlando. Well, this guy has been on the show before. This guy, his star has risen so high in the sky and is burning so hot so that it's not surprising to us that we find Bo Welling on the road because he's always somewhere designing some course. As we welcome Bo to the show. Thanks for coming on the show. I know you're a busy man. It's great seeing you in Orlando, but I always appreciate your time.
Absolutely, Keith. Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I'm driving, but I just got to Texas, and I'm headed down to my project at a place called Freestone. It's about an hour and a half south of Dallas. So, really awesome place. So, excited to be out here and checking all the progress.
Well, you know, you have that other gem going on somewhere around Frisco, and people still rave about it. It's not very old, but, you know, the design for that course by the PGA's headquarters now, between you and Hans, you guys did a fantastic job.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I mean, it was a really special thing to help relocate the PGA of America from Palm Beach Gardens to Frisco. And, you know, the city of Frisco was super involved in the project. Omni Hotels was super involved in the project, and great group of people. And, you know, I think it probably relates to why I'm so busy in Texas. So, but yeah. PGA Frisco, Omni PGA Frisco is a really special place.
What is it about golf course design? Because Chris Wilczynski comes to mind too. He's pretty big in throughout Florida, even though he's from the Midwest. Once word gets out about you guys, whoever it may be, it does spread like wildfire.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been very fortunate to be out here in Texas, and lots of stuff going on. I think a lot of people are moving to Texas. There's just a lot of activity in the golf space. So we have three brand new 18-hole golf courses under construction here in Texas, and about to start three really significant renovations in Texas. So I think I'm going to be in the market for like a cowboy hat and some cowboy boots here before too long, as much as I'm being here.
Well, you kind of already have that kind of laid-back cowboy look to you, so usually a little facial hair going on. So, yeah, probably. I think you being from the South and being headquartered out of Greenville, South Carolina, have that kind of approach, I think, to life. But, you know, it's very stressful being a golf course architect, but you would never know that if you talk to Bo Welling and you see him hanging around and that kind of thing. So how do you mix the two? Have you been able to do that so successfully?
Well, I mean, you know, I think I actually come from a long line of accountants, actually. And my very sort of conservative Southern grandfather used to tell me and my sister sitting around the Sunday dinner table that the food before us was the result of the family's hard work for the clients, like that month, that year, you know, whatever it had been. And so I think a client orientation is a big part of kind of how we approach everything. And yes, it can be stressful, but like, that's our job. Our job is to like help our clients achieve their goals and objectives. And I think that's proven to be a successful way for us to kind of think about what we're doing. And it's also super rewarding. Like when you get something done and accomplished, you've met those goals and objectives, it feels pretty, pretty, pretty cool.
I don't want to put the cart before the horse just yet because there's so many projects you're working on and stuff, but you talk about the clientele. Well, that little gem that you have out in Utah is unbelievable. And then you work with a guy named Tiger. So expectations are high when you're talking about high-value properties and high-value owners and clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a great relationship with TGR Design, Tiger's design company, and have been helping him for a while now. And he's got a big project that you referenced out in Park City, Utah. It's called Marcella. which is sort of related to the expansion of Deer Valley. And we've got, you know, 15 holes shaped. We're going to be finishing up this year. And I mean, I can't wait for people to see this golf course grass and the photographs. I mean, it might be the most photogenic golf course I've ever seen. It's like on these ridges, incredible long range views down into the Heber Valley and the big snow capped mountains everywhere. It's really super spectacular. It has brought my physics training back into play, though, because we're at about 8,000 feet, and we've got some holes that play downhill, you know, quite significantly. So between the elevation effect and the effect of downhill, like, we've got some really long golf holes. I think the golf course is going to tip out at about 8,300 yards, but, you know, that's sort of elevation affected. But it's really super spectacular. So need the snow to thaw out there, and we'll be back out there to try to finish that one up. But
yeah,
super excited about
indeed.
That.
We've gotten to know Beth Armstrong, the young lady overseeing the project, fairly well. She's been on this show a couple times, and she talks about how outstanding it's going to be. But from an architect standpoint, how does that relationship come about, and why is it just the landscape itself that makes it so spectacular, or what the architectural firm has been able to do with that architecture, with that landscape?
Well, I think the good Lord's been the primary architect of creating the site that's just absolutely spectacular. But I think, you know, I'm hopeful that the people appreciate what Tiger's done there and the hand that we've had there in terms of really creating a lot of variety, a lot of interesting golf holes, a lot of very strategic golf holes. But the landscape itself is just absolutely spectacular. I mean, it's the kind of place that you could take a non-golfer to and put them on a golf cart and drive around, and they would just be blown away. It's like that spectacular.
But when you're working with a guy who knows a lot about golf courses, Tiger Woods, I'm talking about, you know, to be selected to work on a property like that, I mean, that speaks, you know, volumes to what you have done over the years. But I mean, that's phenomenal across the board.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very fortunate to have a relationship with Tiger, and feel fortunate to be able to have helped him out now for the last 16 years or so. And he's got a keen mind for what he's trying to do with golf course design, and you know, I think feels a real sense of kind of responsibility in that realm. And, you know, I think he very much is into, you know, trying to create golf that's playable for all. And I think that's all, like, really special. And you get to, you know, these opportunities to work on these incredible sites with them. It's pretty spectacular.
All right. So walk us through. We've had a lot of renowned golf course architects on this show over the years, including the great Reese Jones. But when it comes to somebody being able to visualize a plot of land and see how the golf course is going to have the aliens set it down in that space, is just unbelievable to me. I mean, I love golf course architecture. I cannot look at a piece of land and say, oh, that should be this par four for 375 yards. How does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, it is. It's a bit of a process to get there. Like, I'm not one that just shows up and immediately sees 18 holes of golf, but it's rather a process of starting to do plans and routings and question yourself and analyze. And it's a very iterative process to kind of get there. And that's just the planning part. And then, you know, once you get to construction, it all kind of almost starts all over again. And so the baby poor metaphor that I use sometimes is that, like, we know we're gonna sculpt a bust, and so we know there's a head and eyes and ears and a nose. But, like, you start working on that, and then that ends up taking you kind of in different directions before it's all said and done, as opposed to, like, you exactly see it right from the sort of very beginning. And so that's sort of my process. I mean, I think there might be other architects that are different, but we work really hard at it, and you know, really are always sort of challenging ourselves and making sure that we're doing the best that we possibly can.
Talking to Bo Welling of Bo Welling Design, BWD, and based out of Greenville, South Carolina, but he's hardly ever at the office. I don't know. It goes into voicemail or something. I don't know. Don't call him on that number. That's what I know, because he's out and about and doing so many different things. And there is obviously a team involved. You're not only the founder and the CEO, but, you know, you are the brain thrust, and it's You know, it's a big deal when you get an opportunity to work on a project, because you historically, as long as I've known you, take it very personally when you get asked to design a golf course.
You know, absolutely. It kind of goes back to that, my grandfather, the client orientation. Like, I'm just so wanting to do a great job for our clients and help them, you know, have success. And you very rightly sort of pointed out that we do have a great team. And we've got 14 people in the design company, and many of whom have been with me, like a Scott Benson, a Chase Webb, have been with me for quite some period of time, and they're absolutely fantastic and have that same sort of commitment to, you know, client service and whatnot. And we've also, in the last couple, 3 years, started our own shaping company now as well. So we've got 8 guys operating bulldozers, building, you know, greens, tees, bunkers, and all the golf course features. Joe Titzer sort of heads up that operation, along with Mark Berger and Gary Shapiro. And these guys are just super talented, like true artists in the field. And I just feel really fortunate that we have all these people. But, you know, I'll be honest, the company Christmas party kind of freaks me out. You know, start looking at 20-some-odd people that we feel like you're responsible for. Like, it's a big deal, you know. But I'm very fortunate to have these really talented people that are on the team and have the same passion that I do to really try to go do.
My feeling is you're probably like Papa Bear anyway, so that doesn't matter. But 14 people in your organization, that's huge, because there's so many architects and architectural firms that had to let people go over the last handful of years, if not just a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, I've always been sort of proud that, like, even as bad as it was back in, you know, 2010 and the global financial crisis, we never had to let anybody go. And you know, these folks have made a big commitment to the company, and I feel like it's important for the company to make a big commitment back to our team members. And so I'm really fortunate to have, you know, this great group of people that are with us to help do this. And so it can't be easy, but, like, you know, right now it's lots and lots of fun. And some of our younger guys are like, oh my God, we're so busy, you know. And it's like, man, this is the funnest time in my 30 years of doing this it's ever been. You know, I remember when the phone didn't ring at all, but, like, it's fun when the phone's ringing, man, because you get to go do stuff. So it's pretty awesome.
You're like our good buddy Dave Pels, who is a 30-year overnight sensation.
That's funny. That's good.
Funny and true. You guys worked hard at it, and, you know, to stay the course and to do that. So you think now it's as much reputation as it is results, or is it a combination of 50-50? What percentage would you say when it comes to somebody coming to you looking for your services?
I think it's probably kind of a mix, would be my guess. I mean, I've never really done any true, like, analysis on that, but I mean, I think, you know, if you don't have results, you're not going to get very far in this business. But I do think that our approach and sort of this client mentality, and I think that's very much appreciated by clients. It's not unusual for our clients to end up being repeat clients. And I think, sort of anecdotally, what I feel like I hear from them is that they really appreciate, you know, the service we have to jobs and how responsive we are. And in addition to, like, the skill level and the results, but just in terms of our approach, is very client forward and customer service sort of forward. And that makes it feel good, because that's sort of been instilled in me from, again, going all the way back to my grandfather from a young age. That's like a pretty good way to operate. So, you know, I mentioned Omni earlier. So Omni's a perfect example. So we've originally met the Omni folks when we did PGA Frisco, but now we've probably done 3, 4, 5 projects with them. And it's just really great to be able to work with a very talented group again and again and again. So, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that. The people recognize, like, our effort in addition to sort of skill. So I think it's probably a mix. Short answer.
That was actually a very long Bo Welling answer, which was very short. We're with Bo Welling from Bo Welling Design, the founder and CEO. And And we are back with Bo Welling spending the hour with us, and we appreciate it because Bo's a busy boy. He's out driving around now. He's somewhere in Texas driving around. I think he said he flew into Dallas, and he's been driving, which means he might even stop by Frisco just to check things out before he leaves town. But I don't want to speak for him. Since he's with us, he'll speak for himself. But you said three new golf courses, 18-hole courses in Texas, and you're doing some renovation as well.
Yes, sir. So I am headed about an hour and a half south of downtown Dallas to Fairfield County, Texas, where we have a project under construction called Freestone, which is on the country's largest privately owned lake. And it is absolutely going to be spectacular. This golf course is like jaw-droppingly cool. And so we're well underway, hoping to get that thing grassed here shortly. So really excited about that. We're also working on Lake Travis in Austin, Texas, a place called the Travis Club. And that also is a golf course we're super excited about. You know, kind of spectacular hill country setting. Looking to get that grass this year as well. And then on the new golf course front, we're also helping Tiger with a sort of repeat of the Blue Jack National. So-called Blue Jack Ranch, which is under construction in Fort Worth, Texas. So those are three brand new golf courses that we're working on. And then we're about to do big renovations at a place called Bent Tree here in Dallas, and Hurricane Creek in a place called Anna, Texas, and then Royal Oaks in Houston. So Texas is a busy place for us for sure. So it's great.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to renovate a place called Hurricane Creek. I might be need to step back a little bit on that one.
Hurricane, yeah, it's awesome. It's really cool. So looking forward to that.
So you have this personal touch, and people that are listening right now can you're just a good guy. You come across like that in person, you come across that on the radio, and obviously you come across it in your business. But to make a client feel special, they want to feel like they're the only one that you're working for at the time you're doing it. So how do you balance it? How do you find that feng shui that you can make all your clients feel special while still going out to somebody else's and seating?
Well, I mean, I think we're very careful not to like ever take on too much work, you know, because client service is at the heart of what we really want to do. But it also relates to why we have so many people in the company, is like we want to be able to service our projects as best as we possibly can. And again, I feel very fortunate to have a really great qualified team. But, you know, modern technology sort of changed everything. You know, the ability to liaise and interface with people, it's really amazing what all you can do. I mean, I just landed here in Texas, as we mentioned, but, you know, I was in Florida when I woke up, and I dealt with, you know, three projects this morning down in Florida, and here I am in Texas, going to do stuff here. And so, you're, you know, between Zoom calls and what you're all able to do with technology, it's really kind of amazing to be able to have this sort of connection into people. But the staff's a key part of it. I mean, having people on the ground is super important. You know, we're big believers that golf course design really happens in the field, sort of a handcrafted sort of way is our approach to construction sort of in general. And again, starting the shaping company has been a big part of that for us, big extension of that. You know, so we now have, you know, eight guys shaping golf courses really around the country. And so that's just a further extension of us in terms of the service levels that we're trying to provide.
So what's going on in Florida?
So Florida, we are, we just finished up a big renovation of a place called Jonathan's Landing. We did the Village Course, which is their old historic course. And it was originally a George Fazio golf course. So that was sort of full circle for me to get involved in that. But really great active club. And we've got a great process where we interface with membership, set goals and objectives. And I really think we kind of knocked it out of the park in terms of the end result. And so excited about that. But then we're just starting a new planning process at a place called Hunter's Run. We're going to hopefully do a big renovation if it gets approved of their South course, which is sort of their championship. They have 54 holes. It's sort of their championship course. And, so that's really cool. And then, you know, we've been super involved with the TGL, the new golf league with Tiger, Rory, and the virtual holes. But, you know, we from inception, we've been involved in that. So they had a match on Tuesday night, so it was great to kind of go see that, be involved in all that. So just lots and lots going on. So exciting times.
Well, yeah, that's why we really appreciate Bo making time to come on TW Keith Jones, because he is that kind of guy, but he is that super busy kind of guy. But he is with us for another half hour. We're getting ready to head to the bottom of the hour break. But you definitely want to stay tuned with us, and we'll be back with Bo Welling.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley reminding you you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. I haven't been this excited since I discovered I couldn't lick my elbow.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. The Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
We're back to start the second episode of the show, spending it with the founder and CEO of Bo Welling Design. Huh. His last name is not Design. It's Bo Welling. Welling is the last name, although it could be the middle name, but, you know, Bo Welling, all-around good guy. He laughs at marginal jokes, as you can tell. But I'll have to step up my game as well. But you have this reputation now because partially of what you did in Frisco for the PGA of America, and again, being selected as one of few architects to do designs. It certainly was a game changer for golf. I don't want to say for you because you've been at it, as you said, for three decades plus. But the par 3 course that you designed, and I had the pleasure to play a couple years ago, was super interesting. And then before we went to the break, you're talking about the TGL, that golf league with Rory and Tiger and such. And the game, course-wise, really is kind of morphing and has been morphing now for a few years.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. These sort of new versions of golf are starting to pop up, and I personally think it's absolutely fantastic because it makes golf more accessible, I think, to more and more people. And I'm a big believer that if the world had more golfers, the world would be a better place. And so short courses and some of this golf entertainment stuff to me is very much opening the doors to newer people. That's awesome. So PGA Frisco is called the Swing, and we did that collaboratively with Gil Hance, and that was really fun process unto itself, just to be able to collaborate with him and his partner Jim, be able to do that. So that was really super special. And you know, if you start looking at some of the data around golf and as it relates to short courses, you know, where a good player really outperforms the lesser players, really with long shots, it's not with short shots. And so one of the beauties of the short courses is they sort of strip out these shots that the lesser player is not so great at. And I think that's what helps it make it accessible, in addition to, like, it doesn't take a lot of time to play and this kind of stuff. So I think you're going to see more and more short courses going forward. I just saw a stat from National Golf Foundation that said that almost half the golf courses that were built last year were short courses. And I think that's just a nice data point of just sort of showing how, you know, everything is really, really changing. And so to me, this is all very exciting because I feel like golf was sort of in its own box for adapting to, modern sort of approach and what people want. And I'm super excited about the demographics of golf as well. The stat that I really like is that if you look at juniors, participation rate amongst girls is 2x what it was 20 years ago. And if you look at non-Caucasians, it's 5.5x what it was 20 years ago. And so I think there's a big runway for golf in terms of growth and it evolving and bringing in more and more people. So it's a really exciting time for golf right now.
All right. So what's the difference between a short course and an executive course?
You know, I think people use this word short course in many different ways. So there's no, like, standard thing. I think for us, a short course is akin to like a par 3 course, but we're real into doing like super short holes. And you know, a lot of the ones we've done you know, the holes range from sort of 50 to 100 yards. But we very much don't call them par three courses because we're trying to create an environment that. And so we don't really want score to be super important, but we're trying to create this environment that's fun, it's special, it's relaxed. You know, the attitudes are different. A lot of them that we do are lit for night play. A lot of them have music piped in. They're sort of super, super relaxed. And what we find is that good players really like it. They like that environment, that's sort of a different environment. But they become super accessible for, you know, beginners or even non-golfers because they're accessible. The ones we do have a lot of turf and not necessarily a lot of sand and, you know, cross hazards and sort of thing like that. But everybody uses the word differently. So you'll hear people say short course, and they'll have holes that are longer with people hitting drivers that start to feel more like the executive course. So, like, there's no sort of definition of semantics. But for us, it's the ones we're doing, we're big promoters of these really short holes, sort of 50 to 100 yards in a super relaxed environment. And, like, we're big proponents of it not being nine holes because nine's sort of a golf number. We're trying to kind of create a different environment. So a lot of the ones we do have done are 10 holes or 12 holes or some random odd kind of number of holes. But we just think it's a great onboarding point to the game of golf and a much, you know, relaxed version of golf that people can do in a short amount of time. So we're all in on the short course sort of revolution.
Talking about welling on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Yeah, it's kind of like you do the design. You design the holes until you run out of land. That's the kind of the impression that I've gotten looking at some of the courses on there. But it was interesting, yeah, to get up to a tee box, and I have hit some 50 yarders on executive courses, but it's still a little strange when you get up there, and that's your tee shot is a wedge, you know, or half a wedge, or, you know, I don't know. But it was very interesting, although we played in, I think, we played in the summertime. So even at night when we played, it was hot in Frisco, Texas. But the lights came on.
What's really interesting about the one in Frisco is that it's lit at night. It gives an incredible amount of night play. And, like, there are no tee times or anything. So there's really, like, a cue that almost happens to line up to play the swing at night. It's very, very busy, very, very active. And with the short course, you could do that kind of thing, whereas a, you know, bigger course, that would be obviously harder to do. So it's also extending the time when golf can be, you know, when you can have participation in golf with these sort of shorter courses as well, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, so what demographic are you going after when you design a course like that?
I mean, I think it's really all over the charts. And so, I mean, I think when we did the one with Tiger at Blue Jack outside of Houston, I remember that when we opened it, Steve Elkington was out there, and he played five times in a row. He just couldn't get enough of it. And so, like, good players go love and play. But, like, some of the special moments for me have been there watching, you know, a multi-generational family play with kids that are, you know, 5 or 6 years old that could barely, you know, they almost are just topping the golf ball, but, like, it gets down closer to a 50-yard, you know, hole, and they have this great human moment where they're connecting amongst, you know, family members and special, and you know, the way, again, we're doing them, it's like they can almost be played with a putter if you have to, and so, like, the non-golfer, it's like something that is not super intimidating, so it's a lot of words to say. It's like the entirety of the spectrum of golf, from really, really good players to people that are just starting. And I think that's the beauty of the short course to me, is that it's able to cater to all that differing sort of demographic.
Yeah, the guys I played with were decent players, and I think we did putt a few of the I'll call them tee shots. It was, you know, just easier to get it. So it's kind of like British Open type of golf situation. But you bring up a valid point. You said the word family, and that's where the governing bodies have missed out across the board. They've been a little enlightened because obviously the pandemic enlightened a lot of people in the golf industry when you could play this great sport, but you really couldn't play much of any other sport, especially from a participation standpoint. So, you know, the family element really became important, and it still is. The recreational golfer is way up. We're trying to keep the millions of golfers that come into the game every year in the game. And that's so vital. And that's why, guys like you, Bo, are so important to the game as well, because you're making it more available and making it more playable. Now, golf is a four-letter word, as we like to say, but hard is right there with it, you know. So that's the kind of, you can use those interchangeably, right? Because the game is not easy, and a lot of people struggle with it, and then they get frustrated, and then they leave. So if you make it a playable yet challenging layout, it makes all the difference in the world.
You know, absolutely. I mean, we're super into playability, and you know that word, I think it's overused in golf, and it means different things to different people. But to us, what it means is delivering a golf experience that's enjoyed by the golfer, regardless of his or her skill level. And that can be tricky, because a good player wants to be challenged and tested, whereas a not so good player wants to feel like they have a chance, and it's not impossible. And so you got to accomplish that on the same piece of ground for those different demographics. And so, we have a lot of theories and thoughts about how to do that. We tend to be big subscribers of ground contour as opposed to sand. I feel like every golf architect in the world says we want to challenge the best players in the world, make it fun and enjoyable for everybody else. And then everybody goes sand everywhere, and like sand's the opposite of that to me. Like sand, a good player plays out of sand really well, but a not so good player can't play at all. So we're kind of judicious in our use of sand, and really like turf and ground contour. But like to me, it's even more than, hey, I want to make it playable and enjoyable for all levels. Like I want all levels to be able to go together and play. Like I don't want my friendship to be sorted by handicap level. I don't want my family to be sorted by handicap level. So like I want to go be able to enjoy playing golf with somebody that's better than me, but I want to be able to enjoy going playing golf with somebody that's not as good as me. And so we spent a lot of time thinking about how do we do that, how do we accomplish that. Because to me, the beauty of the game is the sort of social connection, this camaraderie, this golf drives community and drives connection. And like that to me is the magic of the game. And so I think we spent a lot of time on our practice, whether it be big golf courses, golf entertainment facilities, short courses, driving range practice, whatever it is, we spent a lot of time trying to think through, like, how can we have places and spaces that really allow people to come together and have these great human moments and make memories.
Well, you mentioned sand. Now, sand does very well in certain states like Florida or Delaware or places similar to that, and not so much in other states. So how do you take the current conditions in a given state and then adapt your designs around those givens?
Yeah, I mean, every site is different, and you know, what its resources are is different. You know, soil conditions are a big deal. Like we want firm golf playing surfaces. Like, gosh, when the ball is rolling on the ground, like that's the funnest part of golf. It's not when it's going in the air. So we're big about trying to figure out, like, how do we have firm surfaces? And, you know, to the extent you have sandy soils that drain really well, you know, that allows you to have conditions a certain way. And you work in other places, like a PGA Frisco, where the native soils were horrible. But like there, we were able to bring in a sandier material and sort of cap plate to have those firmer conditions. So kind of always working through all that. You know, in terms of bunker sand itself, you know, there's obviously cost to that. You know, where does it come from? Trucking. You kind of look at all that, trying to figure out what options you have, making the best decisions you can for your client. But in terms of just total bunker square footage, I think if you were to go look at our golf courses, like, we tend not to go crazy with total bunker area, just because we feel like it's something that a not so good player really struggles with. But a good player, it's almost easy. I mean, in fact, you go back to the playoff at Southern Hills when Justin Thomas won, he's on the penultimate hole. He and his caddy are talking about what's the number to hit it into the greenside bunker. Like, he's trying to intentionally hit it into a bunker because he feels like it's his best chance. And he actually kind of got jacked up and hit it over the bunker and onto the green, and he went on to win. But, like, you know, a higher handicap was never in a billion years thinking about, let me try to intentionally hit it into a bunker. And so sand to us is just, it's this sort of tricky thing. It's obviously part of the golf landscape. It's part of the element, but we were very judicious, I guess, in terms of where we place bunkers and how that all kind of works. And we tend to subscribe to the idea that a slope of shortcut grass is actually in many ways more interesting than a bunker, at least around greens. And so we try to program all that out. And I'm way in the weeds of golf design and theory now, and it's probably hard to explain over radio, but in any event, that's we spent a lot of time thinking about all this, and where the material actually comes from is a big part of budgets and logistics and all that stuff.
That's excellent. There's always been a big bunker debate because the pros have it great. They know exactly the fluffiness of their sand. There's standards that the tour has to meet for this bunker to be. Those of us not playing on tour, the recreational ones, no, those could be anything. You get a little hard pan in there. You can get all kinds of nonsense going on in the bunkers. So kudos to you for not making it exceedingly difficult. Although Jack Nicklaus talked about it with me one time. He says, you know, they're there for a reason. They're there to be penal. So, you know, if you hit it into a bunker, you shouldn't be rewarded from it. Now, that's, you know, hasn't obviously translated over to the PGA Tour because, you know, the tour professionals are expecting fluffiness. So
I think the expectations, I mean, I agree on one hand, like a hazard is supposed to be a hazard, but I think the time, the expectation a little bit is that you should, quote unquote, have a good lie in a bunker. And that's sort of contrary to the concept of being a hazard. And so, like, the modern, you know, conditioning of bunkers is very different than, say, you know, the origins of golf. It was like, hey, you hit it in a bunker, that was a real penal sort of hazard. And for that better player, it feels like it's not so much that anymore. But for that, you know, 20 handicap person, like, it's still, you know, can be great conditions in the bunker, but it's still, you know, very, very difficult. So it's obviously part of the game and you know, part of the aesthetic of golf and the nature of golf. But my point is just that we think about this a whole lot in terms of where hazards are positioned and how that affects, you know, different demographics, you know, along the distribution of handicaps.
Oh, no, your point is well taken and appreciated as well, because that's exactly how, you know, you want to make it. Again, we'll use that playability term here, but you know, you want to make it playable for those people who are going to play it the most, and to make things unnecessarily tricked up or have forced carries or things like some architects tend to do. It doesn't make you want to go back to the golf course again, which is totally defeating the purpose of going to the golf course in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree.
With Bo Welling this hour, we got one more segment. We've got a lot to talk about. Do you have a favorite state that you like to design, or a state that you want to get to design?
You know, I mean, right now I'm really loving Texas because we got lots going on, but I'm super excited in that in my home state of South Carolina, we're renovating the Shanifer course at Greenville Country Club, which is where I grew up. And so that feels super special. You know, I keep joking that it's either going to be the funnest project I've ever done or singly the most stupid thing I've ever tried to do. But that's fun. And we're about to do the new golf course for Kiowa down on the coast, you know, south of Charleston in my home state of South Carolina. So that feels special. Like, you know, I've been able to do something at home. It's really, really, really awesome.
With Bo Welling heading to the final break, we'll be back. Back to wrap up the show with the renowned architect Bo Welling of Bo Welling Design. I know he could have picked anything, but that's what he picked. And since he's been at it for more than 30 years, you know, he can hang the shingle that he wants to. But before we went to break, we were talking about golf course design and where he likes and what. And I know Minnesota. Why Minnesota for you as far as a want? Besides your winter curling thing and all that stuff, I get that. But Minnesota, it's beautiful in the summertime.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, gorgeous land, and you know, I just think that there's lots of people playing golf in Minnesota. I mean, obviously, short season. Our northern states have higher participation rates. Canada has high participation rates. And I just spent a lot of time in Minnesota over the years, and so I love the people, and I just think it's kind of a neat place. And it's just sort of curiously a place that I've never really worked on the golf side. I've worked a ton on the curling side, but that might be a place. But this is one of these questions, Keith, that like I could go on, and by the time I'm done, I'll mention all 50 states and why I'd like to go work in each and every one of them. So I mean, I think one of the things that we're blessed with in this country is, you know, the diversity of our landscape, the diversity of our population. And I'm always telling people when I go to Europe, you know, they think about the United States as being a singular place. And it's like, man, we're kind of like 50 little different countries in some ways. And I just think there's something really awesome about that. And I think one of the things I've super enjoyed about being in this industry and this profession has been the opportunity to travel and meet people from all over the country and visit different places. And all that's really, really, really neat. So, you know, where we're working right now, we've got projects in Florida, you know, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Texas, Utah, Vermont. And so it's awesome to kind of get around and, you know, get to see, you know, all these places.
Yeah, kudos to you. That is my on my list. I only have about 11 states left to get to, but there is something special about this great country, and as you say, each one is a country unto itself. There's so many different things. Even you mentioned North Carolina. North Carolina is interesting because you have the Atlantic on one end, and it's a long state, right? And then you have the mountains on the other end, and you have a lot of stuff in between. It's just it's fascinating to drive through that state. Usually I'm going south, headed towards Raleigh or headed to Pinehurst or something. But when you get away from that area, it really shows you the amazing things. In South Carolina, your home state, I know you have so many things going on there. And it's, you know, again, you can go over towards, you know, Kiowa, or you can go over in the other direction where you're close to Georgia. And it's just, yeah, it's just fascinating. So kudos to you. And there may be a bow welling course in every state by the time you finish. So I wouldn't be surprised by that.
That'd be awesome. That'd be fun.
Yeah. So the projects, how do they come to conclusion? What do you do, and how do you know when it's time, and when do they finish up? Because it's obviously almost like a domino effect. One finishes, and then you're on to the next, and next, and next.
Yeah, but you're a little bit like a farmer in that you're trying to, you know, build the golf course and hit the growing season. And, you know, so generally speaking, we're trying to get grass planted and, you know, summertime. So we're racing all these projects here in Texas to get them all, you know, ready to be grassed, you know, this summer. And then, you know, when you get them grassed, then it's time to move on and start building, you know, the next sort of series ones to, you know, get grassed the following year. But in some ways, it never ends, because, at least for us, because you end up developing these relationships with the people, and we're kind of constantly going back to the projects, and invariably there are sort of things that come up. And you've made friendships and stuff too. So I think that's one of the things I really appreciate about the business, is sort of the human side again of the connections that you make. And, you know, it's not unusual for us to have a relationship with the golf club for, you know, 20, 30 years, you know, kind of thing. And so that's really, really neat. And, you know, golf courses are growing and evolving things. So there's always sort of change, kind of relooking at stuff. And so just because you maybe get done with the build or the rebuild, it doesn't really mean it's over. It's just the launch of kind of the next phase of the golf course, and it's the project and its maturation, if you will.
You're never going to retire, are you? It's just not going to happen.
You know, I get asked that from time to time, and it's like it kind of becomes part of your life, your lifestyle, and it's just so exciting. And I feel like I've worked really hard in my career, and you know, I'm able to maybe reap some benefit from, you know, to my mind, lots of sacrifice and hard work, you know, over the years. So I'm just enjoying it right now.
Well, keep up the great work, my friend. Bo Welling of Bo Welling Design, my guest on Tea with Keith Jones. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Play a Bo Welling course. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.